Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Aftermath. Today we'll be speaking with guest expert Dr. Suzanne Leonard, professor of English and director of the graduate program in gender and cultural studies at Simmons University. She's also the author of Wife Incorporated, The Business of Marriage in the 21st Century. Let's hear what she has to say about the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal. So, Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, can you start off by giving our listeners a little background on your field of study?
Sure. I am an English professor at Simmons University in Boston, but I actually specialize in a discipline called feminist media studies, which really aims to look at popular culture through a feminist lens. So I study everything from popular literature to television, to film, to new media, to women's magazines, you know, anything that sort of exists in what we might call the kind of like female media sphere is sort of within my bailiwick.
And so your latest book, Wife Incorporated, The Business of Marriage in the 21st Century, that focuses more on the business of marriage, I guess.
It does. It does. And that book really looks at representations of wifedom across American popular culture. So I look at everything from online dating and trends in online dating to reality television shows to fictional shows about political wives, and many political wives are featured in such a way because of their political scandals, which is, I know, something that we'll be talking about today. So I have a particular interest, obviously, in marriage, and also a particular interest in kind of marriages that play out on the public stage.
So let's jump right in. How does this play into the Hillary and Bill Clinton marriage? How is
sure.
their marriage? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think as soon as Bill Clinton really started his kind of national political career, their marriage has been sort of front and center, right? Questions about their marriage, about the authenticity of their marriage. You know, Bill had long been reported to be a philanderer, and had, you know, multiple accusations of unwanted sexual contact with women. When he was running for president, there was a very famous interview with him and Hillary on CBS where he basically said, you know, look, this is a private matter between me and my wife, but I think I've told the public all they need to know. And she sat there and agreed with him, and, you know, and it really presented a united front sort of about their marriage. But that being said, their question had been dogged by questions of fidelity, and all kinds of that, you know, just so much gossip. Were even together, you know, was this kind of a business partnership, right? Which is obviously something that I think about in my book too, about not just the intimate emotions associated with marriage, but kind of the economics of marriage, and also the kind of career and professional ambitions. So certainly she is somebody who, as we know, had serious and significant professional ambitions of her own. And so in some ways, I'd say the Lewinsky scandal confirmed for a kind of prurient public something that they had long suspected. Which was that there was plenty of hanky-panky going on behind the scenes, right? And so then, you know, I think as all eyes were on Bill, almost equally were all eyes on Hillary, right? The question of would she stay? You know, would she go? You know, would she stand by her man? Would she talk about this? So I think that in some ways the affair, not only the affair with Lewinsky, not only kind of put all these questions of, you know, his sexuality on the table, but also put all these questions of kind of their marriage front and center in the national spotlight.
So Hillary was supportive of Bill during the scandal. Do you think that mm-hmm. this had an effect on the media coverage of America's reaction to this event?
You know, I think so. I mean, in some ways, I think it dampened. I mean, she had always been quite a controversial figure, I think. But her sort of she did stay with him and stand by him, but she's never really talked in any kind of frank terms about that decision. In her autobiography, she has just these sort of like very tightly worded sentences about, you know, they went on vacation to Martha's Vineyard and sort of Buddy the dog was the only one who wanted to spend any time with him, right? But she never, you know, she never really came out and wanted to talk about what she was doing or why. And I think that in some ways it made America not necessarily very sympathetic to her, because they wanted more, right? They sort of wanted more of an insight into what was going on. So I think the tide of public opinion was partly not with her because of her lack of willing to make herself vulnerable and, you know, maybe talk about her pain, as some wives have come forth and done.
Yeah, it feels like a real lose-lose situation for Hillary on that
absolutely,
front.
Absolutely. You know, I really think it was. And it's been interesting to me, as somebody who's studied subsequent political affairs, you know, she, in a sense, I think, wrote the rule book, and then a lot of people have done different things. And in mm-hmm. some ways, I think a lot of people have done different things to not be perceived as Hillary, right? As sort of a reaction formation to her.
Now, I consider myself a feminist, but mm-hmm. I have to admit that I'm not well-versed in the differences between the second and the third wave of feminism. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, sure. So sort of, I think briefly noted, there is sort of the idea that the second wave was very much associated with a tide of women in the 70s, kind of coming on the heels of the sexual revolution, for whom kind of traditional feminine norms were felt to be very restrictive. So traditional domestic arrangements, you know, sort of breakdowns in household labor where women were, you know, expected to take care of kids and, you know, maybe not expected or even supported in kind of advocating for professional gain. And so there was a lot of talk. There's also a lot of attention during this time to just all the ways in which women had been shut out of institutions of power. So be that the political realm or even thinking about the healthcare industry, right? Like tests were done on various ailments and they were only done on men, right? So we didn't know a lot about women's healthcare, for example. There was also sort of a popular period of time where women were going back to school in droves, right? Sort of you had adult women kind of going back to school to get higher education. And so it was a multi-pronged, I think it was a multi-pronged movement that was, I think this is important to say, the second wave feminist movement is often narrated as having started with Betty Friedan's quite famous book, The Feminine Mystique, where she said, you know, housewives are bored and they're taking Valium and, you know, what they really need is jobs, right? So like these bored, educated white women, again, need to get jobs. And that is not all that second wave feminism was, but it's pretty much popularized as the most the most famous version of second wave feminism, which has led to the charge that second wave feminism was largely a white women's issue. In actuality, in practice, that wasn't entirely the case, right? There were actually women of color who were also looking at things like, you know, reproductive health for women of color. You know, again, thinking about discrimination in the workplace, right, for women of color. But those were not the stories that the media, I think, was really covering with a lot of energy. And I think you could still make that case today. So. Sorry, this is such a hard question because I spent my life kind of thinking about the differences between these waves. I'm trying to give you a somewhat pithy.
No, I love it. It's really okay. Helpful.
It's helpful. Okay. So to sort of think about this distinction between kind of second and third wave feminists, what happened in the 90s is basically you had a branch of feminists, more vocal, more vocal branch that said that basically kind of there needed to be more attention to what we think of as the intersectionality, which is simply put sort of the intersection between different identity categories. So like race and gender, or race and class, or gender and sexual orientation, right? And so, you know, the third wave just came out and said, you know, women are not all alike, right? Sort of. So, you know, a middle class cisgendered heterosexual woman has certain privileges that a black lesbian, a working class woman does not, for example, right? And that those differences lie along all these axes of identity, right? And so I would say that the third wave was much more attuned in a kind of public way to the fact that you couldn't just sort of claim solidarity, you know, gender solidarity, without also accounting for all these other nuances of privilege and power.
And this background is great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. The only other thing I was going to say is there is talk nowadays about sort of the fourth wave of feminism, which
right.
is very much connected to sort of like the media sphere and sort of new media, right? So sort of like, you know, what Twitter has done for Me Too, for example, right? And that's just one fairly popular example. So that's, I hope that's helpful in just giving you some sense of the way people think about this. And again, I should say, I'm very much giving you sort of an American feminist historical rendering.
Well, what the reason I bring this up and why I think it's important to this particular tragedy or mm-hmm. scandal is because, you know, in talking about it, we brought up the second wave feminist movement as having an effect on the scandal. But I think what we really meant was this third wave feminist movement. And in your opinion, how mm-hmm. did that affect the Lewinsky, Clinton situation? Did
yeah.
it help? You know, did it help or did it hurt?
Well, I think a couple things. One is there was an idea that Hillary was your kind of like classic second waver, right? So she was someone who was, you know, was very politically ambitious, had gone to a women's college. You know, I think she was salutatorian or something. You know, she clearly had, she was a white woman with a lot of privilege and a lot of ambition. And she was very much sort of kind of fit in very well with this like notion of kind of what the second wave feminist was, right? And I think you could think of someone like Linsky, you know, as a younger woman who, you know, was, I think, pretty upfront about the consensual nature, in her opinion, the consensual nature of the relationship that she was having with President Bill Clinton. I think through the lens of 2020, we might think a little bit differently about those issues of consent, which is to say that, you know, by all accounts, Lewinsky was a starstruck, you know, a White House intern, you know, when this affair with Bill Clinton started. So the differences in power, right, kind of the power differentials between them is really hard to ignore. But I also think you got... And this is kind of, I think, an ugly portrayal by the media, but you got this portrayal of Hillary as this sort of like shrewish, cold wife who was not sexy at all. And so then, you know, Bill Clinton turns to the younger, you know, kind of the younger, more fun, more sexually free, more sexually liberated, you know, woman. So I think one thing that sort of disturbs me about the scandal as a feminist is that it seemed to pitted these two women against each other, partly for what they represented, without really thinking about the nuances of, you know, of these women and of their agendas, their desires, you know, and you know, kind of what their own agency.
While Bill Clinton, you know, he does get impeached by the House of Representatives, it feels like Monica was the one who actually paid the larger price on a social level.
Absolutely.
Why is that? And how do you think that outcome would be different today, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of question of being the other woman, you know, particularly the kind of like younger woman. I mean, the charge of home wrecker, right? I mean, it's very easily and liberally applied to people that, you know, often women, right, who have affairs with married men. And, you know, from what I understand, I mean, Monica Lewinsky was shunned, socially isolated, bullied. I mean, her entire life, right, has been, you know, in a sense, framed through the lens of this scandal. And, you know, and obviously not for Bill. I mean, this is just one sort of note, right? And similarly, frankly, for Hillary, right? I mean, this is just sort of one note and a long and sort of storied public career. I think also we need to just be honest about the way that the United States kind of handles sexuality, right? We're fascinated by it, and we're so quick to judge people, you know, who don't behave in ways that are deemed moral, and then they're completely isolated for it, right? They're shunned, they're isolated, and they're scorned. I do think there is a slightly different playbook now for women in that situation. I mean, it's sort of weird, but I've written about this a little bit too. I mean, now you often see women kind of like they get jobs advertising for Ashley Madison, or they get reality talk shows, or you know, or they, you know, like there is this whole sort of there is this whole celebrity. There's a whole kind of like celebrity circuit, right, where you can now find kind of other women kind of leveraging their name in order to, you know, sell products or sort of brand themselves. But I mean, that all came far too late for Lewinsky, right? And I also don't think Lewinsky wanted to be known, you know, for that either, right? I mean, you know, I think she was really unfairly portrayed as sort of some kind of like mindless young floozy. And that was a really easy narrative to kind of slot her into. And I think a real disservice was done to her, probably more than anybody else in this triangle.
Yeah, I remember as a, because I was a kid when the scandal happened, you know, there were things you heard about Monica Lewinsky that kind of stuck with you. And now in relearning about it and the ins and outs, she really does come off as like a awesome, solid woman.
I know. I mean, it was about almost 6 years ago, I remember, she actually started to work on kind of an anti-bullying campaign. You know, she did some talks about thinking about online bullying. In the kind of irony of all ironies, right? For a little while, Melania Trump was going to make that one of her signature items as first lady. And I thought, oh my God, poor Lewinsky. I mean, here, once again, she certainly has legitimacy to speak on, on kind of online bullying and online scorning. And yet, Melania Trump tries to sort of make this her issue. And obviously that seems to have gone nowhere. But as we're saying, I think a real disservice was done to Lewinsky.
Now, Linda Tripp is also an interesting character in this scandal. And I don't know, you tell me, but it feels like she represents a lot of the anger and vigor that, women themselves throw at these situations.
Yeah.
The judgment.
And when I think about her willingness to sort of use her friendship with Lewinsky and sort of manipulate that, right? Kind of manipulate that friendship to then, sort of to turn on Lewinsky for this bigger project, right, of the Ken Starr investigation and bringing down Bill Clinton. And, it's really, again, sort of troubling to me as a feminist that it was this, toxic, a female friendship turned toxic and manipulative. Lewinsky was used, right? I mean, Lewinsky mm-hmm. was used as a pawn in a much, much larger, much longer standing, history of people going after Clinton for all kinds of things. But in this particular case, it was part of the Paula Jones investigation, right? He was being investigated mm-hmm. for the Paula Jones sexual harassment. And then, the Lewinsky thing got all kind of wrapped into that. Whatever you think about sort of Clinton and his, sexual behaviors, if you think just about the Lewinsky thing, should extramarital sex be the thing that brings down, a sitting president? I think it just says something about what our country values, we continue to care a lot about what people do in their sexual lives. And I would argue not caring enough about sort of what they do that really harms other people in real material ways, in terms of like the policies that they make or, the way they treat business. And, I think there's just so much corruption that doesn't get uncovered because it's frankly not as steamy of a story. I mean, the other thing that I should probably say here is, this is fascinating, right? This is just fascinating story. And, I think there is a way in which we all want to sort of see into other people's bedrooms, right? I mean, the film Rear Window is literally about that, right? The Hitchcock film, where Jimmy Stewart is sitting there, literally looking into other people's windows. And, and I think this kind of offered the American public. I mean, how often do you get to see into the, the sort of bedroom windows of the president? It was groundbreaking, I think, on that level.
So Bill Clinton was the president whose job and presidency was on the line. And he's the one who was married. He's the one who cheated. He's the one in the position of power. Why is it that the scandal is so centered on the women? Why are we talking about the women?
Why are we talking about them? That's a great question. it's funny. That's a great question. I don't have a great answer for it, but I think it's funny. Bill Clinton said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And he lied, right? He lied. But there is still, I think, something about a white man in power saying something with authority and definition that people just sort of believe or they want to believe, right? And I also think men have the liberty and the luxury of being all kinds of things besides their sexual personas. Right. I mean, Bill Clinton went on, to kind of found whatever the Clinton Foundation that does all kinds of work. I mean, he had such a presence and such a name for himself outside of all of this, right? And I think women aren't given that luxury, right? Women are sort of reduced in many ways to like their bodies, their appearances, and their intimate ties, right? Those are the things. You know, those are the things we tend mm-hmm. to remember and care about in some ways when it comes to women.
It's interesting because then, you know, we as Americans, we care a lot about what people do in their sexual lives, like you said. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. but yet we don't care at there are levels at which we care about, like whether you're a white man. But if you're a woman, we care a lot, you know.
Yes. Yes.
Right. If you're a white man, we care. We still care, but
yes,
a little
we
less.
We definitely still care. Like a little less, right? And we're also kind of like, oh, well, there's like maybe other things to talk about, right? About these yeah. white men. Right? Whereas these women, I still, you know, I mean, even kind of in my own research, I mean, it's, I pretty much write about Hillary because I write about her marriage, right? So even I, you know, like, right. you know, sort of criticizing this, you know, this aspect of what people are interested in. I've always been more interested in Hillary's marriage than I have in her governmental policies. <you know?
laughs> Same.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, I just want to make one more like little notable point that's like not about Lewinsky, but have you read the new book, Hillary, the one that reimagines her life without Bill?
No, but I've heard about that.
Yeah, it obviously Lewinsky's not there, but Bill Clinton's Bill Clinton very much is there, and his kind of philandering and wandering eye is very much the reason, and also sort of the hints of sexual impropriety and unwanted sexual contact are, I mean, I hate to give this away, but like sort of the reason that Hillary does not end up marrying Bill, and in this reimagining, she sort of then goes on to become president. And so, there's a way in which I think this scandal still very much lives on when we think about, you know, her political past, present, and future.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, you wanted to ask a question, but I just think that's relevant because that book literally just came out a couple months ago.
Yes, actually, our guest mentioned it. It's called Rodham.
Yes, Rodham. That's it.
Yes. And it is that like that sliding doors element of the, you know, what if, you know, mm-hmm. where would Hillary be right now? It's mm-hmm. fascinating. So at the end of the day, mm-hmm. who, if you had to pick something or someone, who or what do you think is to blame for the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal?
Okay, I'm an English professor, so I'm going to split hairs here.
You have to pick something.
Okay, but like, is the question who's responsible for the affair or who's responsible for the scandal?
Good question. I think it's for everything that led to the scandal being, you know, getting so out of proportion.
If I had to pick, like, you're making me pick one,
tough.
Right? You're like, this is really tough.
But it can be a concept. It doesn't have to be a person. Can be a concept.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's sort of where I'm leaning. I think it is an American public that has a completely hypocritical view of sexuality and morality. Which is to say that sexual indiscretions are in some ways the biggest sin that an American can commit, and that somehow outranks violence, it outranks corruption, it sort of outranks all kinds of other injustices. That somehow, because we place such an equation between sexuality and morality, that of course this would blow up to be a huge scandal because it's the president of the United States. When in my opinion, there are so many things that prior and current presidents do that are so much more depraved than having an affair with an intern. That it almost, when I really think about it, I feel almost like kind of sick to my stomach about it, right? About all the things that people in power get away with that never become scandals, where millions of lives, right, are directly and direly impacted by the policies or the cronyism, right? You know, you name it, right? That have such a more lasting material effect on Americans' lives. So I think it's the hypocrisy.
Wow. I mean, you're blowing my mind. I got to tell you, that wasn't even mentioned. So I have to thank you, Suzanne, so much for coming on our show and really helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for this, you know, incredible political scandal. So thank you.
Oh, no. Thank you for making or allowing me really to think about this. As I'm sure you figured out, I could spend hours and do indeed spend hours thinking about this. So, so this has been a real pleasure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hello, everyone.
What did you guys think about what Suzanne had to say? I wrote down a lot of notes.
America is such a prude.
Get over it, right? What
yes.
do you think that is? It's a puritanical roots, right? It's we came over here because of religion and all that stuff. We just were like a bunch of prudes up in Jamestown or whatever.
Yeah, sexually prude, but when it comes to alcohol, not. Like, they love alcohol.
Well, there was a big push. Like, it could have gone one way.
Puritans drink a lot of alcohol.
You know what it reminded me of was a little bit of, remember the Pompeii episode? Like, those were the Romans who, like, wanted to get away. Crazy orgies, like, all kinds of drinking and all that stuff. America doesn't really have that. We got, like, the closest thing is Vegas, probably, which at this point is, like, a family-friendly, like, getaway where like Cirque du Soleil, like that's this is about as sexy as it gets.
Yeah, you have to leave the country. You have to go to Cancun to really let loose.
But we do have like a collective suppressed sexuality, I feel, as this country, which really, which Suzanne really keyed into, I think.
Yeah. Well,
and I was so fascinated. I cannot wait to read her book, Wife Inc. And I was so fascinated, fascinated, and think she's so right that we define women by who they're married to and sort of their emotional and sexual lives and their bodies and everything. And men are just, we can accept that men are more complicated and dynamic than that. But women really get boiled down to, like, you know, you always hear people do it, and people are more aware of it now, but they'll be like, oh, this is Hillary Clinton. She's Bill Clinton's wife.
Right.
And that's how we like to introduce women.
That's why I always introduce Matt as Amanda's husband. Matt Gourley, Amanda Lund's husband.
Yeah, and maybe
he loves it.
You know, yeah, we should. We need to work to force the opposite effect. So I think as guys, maybe a sort of forward-thinking thing to do is to say, "Hi, my name is Chris Smith, and the last time I had sex was," and then sort of fill in the blank so that people see men more as sort of sexual beings, right?
Well, I think also, Chris, you could risk, you know, showing a little more skin.
Oh, come on, Amanda. I'm already down to two buttons on my shirt. I mean, how much further can I
Please.
Go? For Christ's sake, leave me alone.
These shirts are going to be flapping in the wind. Yeah. We need at least one button.
The alarmy is demanding it.
Okay, well, I'm willing to do whatever the alarmy wants. So if they want tighter fitting shirts, or if they want my hair to be wet and sort of draping down the back of my neck, yeah. I mean, I'm willing to accommodate quite a bit. I'm pretty much a ham like that. I'll do whatever you need.
It is a dream, though, to just have all of these things flipped. And, you know, there are fun movies that have tried to play around with that idea. But if we could really just live in it for a day, I mean, it's hard. It's really... it's just fascinating how all of that is put on women. And if only men could live through it for a day, I wonder where we'd be as a society.
Mm. There's a Beyonce video I think you should check out. It's called If I Were a Boy.
Yeah, we figured that out. Yeah. Beyonce figured that out already.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess we're...
So, Rebecca, I have to note, does after your conversation with Suzanne, does this change your verdict? Because just to remind everyone, we sent Dirty Politics to jail and we gave Clinton the slap and was it?
Patriarchy. The backhand.
No, are you
right?
Sure it wasn't? What's her face? The Linda Tripp.
Oh, Linda Tripp
got the backhand.
Right. It was a last minute switch. I think American prudism, would you call it?
let me Google around and see what kind of term I can come up for. Like Puritanism. I know we've gotten into that before. American.
Yeah. But it's less Puritanism. For me, prudism. Yeah, she made a really good point where it's like, we should be focusing, these presidents have, you know, with their policy have caused such great harm to, you know, not just people outside of our country, but just our very own people. I mean, we're seeing it happen right now. And yet, what's at the forefront? It's like someone had an affair. It's like, who cares, right? Who's having sex with who? Who cares?
I mean, I feel I totally get that. And I believe you would say prudishness.
I called it prudism.
I know, which I like better, to be honest. So I think maybe we go with prudism. But I totally understand that. The only reason why I'm like, oof, I don't know, is because of the power dynamics involved.
Right.
That's the only reason. But at the time, that's not why people were upset.
Right. That's not, no, that's now looking back on it.
Yes. So I'm with you. If you wanted to set Dirty Politics free and go with American prudism.
Because Dirty Politics was the, this is the thing, Dirty Politics was the underlying force, right? That's why they wanted to get him.
They were taking advantage of the prudism.
Yeah. They were taking advantage of the prudism. But it's like, why are we so prude? What came first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Mm.
Prudism came
Even
first.
Even that is like too sexual for me. Like right now. egg, chicken. What's the chicken wearing? Is the chicken clothed? Hopefully the chicken has clothes on.
Okay. I feel good about keeping Bill Clinton and Linda Tripp with a slap and backhand. So I think I'm going to give it to American prudism.
Wow.
Yes.
We're swapping out inmates left and right over here. Jeez. I mean, happened to sticking with your decision?
No, I don't want to be hard-headed. No, new information changes things. Retrials should be allowed. And one of the scariest things for me in life is to be convicted of a crime I didn't commit. So, I mean, if new information comes to light, you got to change it. You got to change the verdict.
Okay.
Well, I'm calling it American prudism. You're going to the alarmist jail. You know what I'm glad about? I think I made prudism a word.
I believe you did. Let me look it up and just see. Oh, there's something called prudismo. Is that like machismo, but for prudes?
I don't know.
Fact checker.
I don't know where I just saw that, but I actually like prudismo.
Yeah. America is so prudissimo. They're prudissimo.
It's prudish. Prudissimo is not a word. It might be a different language, but we're speaking English here. I mean, at least
All right. You and your facts. Fine. It's prudishness. I'm aware it's prudishness, but we're calling it prudism. So just relax. Everyone relax.
I'm perfectly relaxed.
I mean, our listeners. Okay. So, I mean, that's great. I'm glad we talked to Suzanne. And now, you know, tune in next week because we got more coming your way. We've got an episode on the Betty Broderick murders. I'm very excited about that one.
So just so everyone can sort of get up to pace on that, there is a great podcast called, let me look, it's All Simple.
Yes. Right. What is that?
It's called It Was Simple, and that's a LA Times podcast. Also, the Dirty John hashtag Betty, or not hashtag, colon Betty Broderick murders, starring Amanda Peet, is really great. So if you want to try to binge that before we talk Betty Broderick, I highly recommend.
Yeah, do it. Amanda will be happy because she's a huge Amanda Peet fan.
I am.
Okay, so you have your homework, Alarmy. See you next week.
Any requests for what you want me to wear during these podcasts where you don't see me, I'm happy to oblige.
Don't send those over, please. Yes,
send pictures. You know, get a Pinterest board going.
I want to see Chris in that navy blue Gap dress.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.